ओमज्ञानतिमिरं रहस्याज्ञानं जलशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरु चैतन्य चरण दास ब्रह्मचारी फ्रॉम इस्कॉन पुणे हैज आस्क्ड मी टू रिप्लाई टू सम क्वेरीज रिगार्डिंग द कंपाइलेशन श्री भक्ति सिद्धांत बाइबल प्लीज on the basis of this plans to make a review for Back to Godhead magazine. So these are the questions and I'll answer them. And I hope you find it interesting and enlightening. So here's the questions. Maharaj, this book is a magnum opus spanning three large volumes. Magnum opus. Let's see what the dictionary says for that. You know what that is? They have that in Czech, that word magnum opus. It's Latin, obviously. It means one's great, a great work. Yeah, it's exactly what the dictionary says. A great work, especially a literary or artistic masterpiece, or the greatest single work of an artist, a writer, or a composer. So he's written this book as a magnum opus spanning three large volumes. Can you please tell me how you got the idea and inspiration to do such a huge book? And the next question is related to that. The book seems to be much more than a biography with its three-volume format, each addressing separate topics. How did you finalize this three-volume format? Well, the answer is that it's treated in the preface or the introduction that I didn't have any idea to do such a big work. And actually, if I'd have known how much work I had to put into it, I might not have started it in the first place because it took up a lot of my life. But my original idea was to collect unrecorded anecdotes of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's pastimes from his still remaining disciples. This was in 1985, maybe it was. I had the idea to do this when there were still quite a few of his disciples present in the world. So I was based in Bangladesh, and time to time I'd come to India and I'd run around in different places, Bengal and Orissa, and try and find his disciples. That was my idea. And I collected some anecdotes. And how did it become such a big book? It wasn't my idea. It just happened, kind of. I just found different sources of information here and there at different times, and I incorporated them, and then it gradually grew. And three volumes, all that was just practical, because to sort out the topics in different ways. There was one quote from, well, one of my disciples, Nityananda Das, who's based in Govardhan. You know him? He was in Salem. Were you in Salem when he was there? Yes. He came time to time. You know, not when he was staying there. So he was present when Dhanodar Swami and Madhavananda Prabhu were discussing that book, and they appreciated the style, the content, and something else. Structure, content, and style. The structure, content, and style. The structure is also important in writing. I'm just realizing that now. In the last 2 weeks, I've been revising an essay I wrote about 16 years ago on speaking strongly in Prabhupada's service. Did you read that in my memory? I'm revising it now, and it's taking quite a long time because I'm just realizing how it's not very well structured. So now I'm putting it into different categories and actually cutting out a lot of it. I did some things, and there's a lot of repetition in that. So structure is also important. It's something like a meal. If you just throw everything all together on the plate, can't work out what to do, what to eat, and how to eat it, and it's just a big homogeneous mass. But then if you have all the different preparations and you know the proper order to eat them in, then the meal becomes more pleasing and more digestible. So how did it happen? Well, the book took a life of its own, as I say. It wasn't my idea. But I said I probably wouldn't have done it if I'd have known how much work it would come to be, but at the same time, I'm glad I did do it. It's given me inspiration to do so much more. The only thing is, my life is, the greater part of it's already over. That's one of the ironies of material life. That you, in youth, when you have energy to do things, you don't have the knowledge or wisdom to do it. And then when you're older and then you have a better vision, you don't have the strength to do it. And then you just die. Anyway, let's see what Krishna has in store. I have many, many plans for writing. But it's a lot of work between the germination of the idea and the final product. You have spent over 2 decades researching for the book. Can you share some memorable experiences while doing research? Well, memorable experiences in doing research, it's not like the kind of thing that would get featured on a TV program or in a movie. It's not the kind of excitement you get from doing research. It's not the kind of excitement that the rajasic excitement that someone whips out his sword and cuts the head off 20 people. The kind of excitement a researcher finds in finding, just like one devotee was telling me, he found the old manuscripts of Baladeva Vidyabhushan's commentaries on the Upanishads, which is a great find. If anyone knows, how many people in this world even know that Baladeva Vidyabhushan did commentaries on the Upanishads when they were considered lost? So it's a great find, but how many people in the world are going to get excited about that? If someone found that and they ran out of the street and they were jumping up and down in excitement, so I was like, what happened? Did you win the lottery? They say, no, I discovered Baladeva Vidyabhushan's Upanishad. Really? They wouldn't even know what you're talking about. They wouldn't find it in the slightest bit interesting. So yeah, memorable experiences are there, but again, it's not the kind of thing that would be appreciated by most people. Of course, I met many people, and I discovered discovering the writings and the just reading them. Writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the writings about him, that in itself is a highly enlightening experience, which I've tried to share some of that with the readers of that book. That comes to the next question. Can you share some pastimes and teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially those relevant for current ISKCON devotees? Yes, some, that's the thing. People say it was a very big book, but it's really just a condensation of so much that I read and heard and collected. That's, again, what research is. I just got this one magazine of Gopal Jiyu Publications. Madhavananda Prabhu has produced that. And seeing that, I can just understand that. Tremendous amount of research goes into making this kind of publication. What you get is only a small percentage. The researcher and the compiler, they go through so much and they select the cream, you could say. Although it's all cream, it's all nectar. Krishna consciousness. They select certain particularly relevant points and present that. Can you share some pastimes and teachings? Well, read the book. That's what the book is for. You can read it. Can you share your insights about how your study in this book reveals the link by which Srila Prabhupada inherited and expanded the legacy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? This is a very important question. This book gives some insight on that, but really it's such an important topic that it requires another book. And I plan to do that if Krishna gives me the life and the time and the energy to do that. So many important books that need to be written to tracing the parampara. What is the nature of our parampara? Because in many ways, if you see our parampara, in many ways Bhaktivinoda Thakur seemed to be very different from all the acharyas previous to him. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj is very different to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is very different to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And Prabhupada is very different to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in many ways. So, finding the link, what is the link that we should understand how each acharya he lives on the principle of Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chitete Kariya Aikya Arna Kariya Mane Asha. He lives on that principle, and as a result of that, yasya deve parabhakti yata deve tata guru tasyaite katitahi arta pakasha deva hamana. I'm not translating these verses, you know, just come from Bhakti Shastri. If you did your Bhakti Shastri, you don't know what the meaning of this is, then what's the use of your Bhakti Shastri studies? So, they all live by that, the link is there. By reading Prabhupada's books, as Prabhupada said, we get in touch with all the previous acharyas. But people with external vision, they may not see the link, or they may protest that the link isn't there. So this is a very important subject. Again, I plan to make more books. Many devotees may feel overwhelmed by the size of the book. Can you share some points that will inspire them to read the book? Yes, it's a... Yeah, I'm sorry that it's so small. But it was too... I considered it too big a job for myself to translate everything I had on hand, so I just made a small book. So I'm sorry for making such a small book. And I pray that in the not-too-distant future that devotees will translate all the extant works of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. You never know, they might discover more. A lot of them are missing and reputed to be destroyed. But they may come to light. So, please read the book, even though it's so small, and it's a good introduction. The book seems to be written in somewhat abstruse English. Well, the word abstruse itself is an abstruse adjective. Was there any reason for choosing this sort of language? I'm going to look that word up in the dictionary. Okay, I'll look it up for you. Abstruse, difficult to understand. Recondite, which is another abstruse word. What does recondite mean? Abstruse. Look in the dictionary. Abstruse. What does it say? Recondite. You look at me. Recondite, it says abstruse. It means difficult to understand. I mean, it's difficult to understand if you don't know it. If you know what the word abstruse means, then it's not difficult to understand. If you don't know, then it's difficult to understand. So, it's difficult to understand if we have a limited vocabulary, but yeah, I chose, as I also wrote in the introduction, I chose to use somewhat abstruse English, or quite a number of words that are not in common parlance. Want to look up that word parlance? Commonly used speech. Well, to be, one reason is to be in tone with the style of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself. I was saying Prabhupada is different from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, not in essence, but in style of presentation. So Srila Prabhupada's style of presentation was very accommodating. He made it available to everyone. Whereas Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's style, which I wrote a lot about his linguistic style, it's challenging. His whole style of personality is to bring people up, come up to the standard. Whereas Srila Prabhupada, although he's very regal and aristocratic in many ways, but he was also very accommodating, and Srila Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness seem very easy and natural for everyone in any status of life to take to. Whereas Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his style was more like, come up. So in every way, even linguistically, there are so many words in the English language which the average English speaker doesn't know. And of course, English is the second language it's the number one second language in the world. It's the world's major link language. So you'll find, just like in India, maybe someone who is first language is, his home language is Telugu, and marries someone whose home language is Konkani or something. And then they speak in English at home, because they both know, the husband and wife both know English. That would have to be a love marriage, but that's modern India. So, English is the second language of many people, but even and those of it as a second language, they generally have a very limited vocabulary. And they think they know English well, but they don't. And then, even those who have English as a first language, for instance, most people born in America, quite a few people in America, their first language is Spanish, right? Or Korean. Besides, I've told you some areas in America where people, they hardly know English at all. It's just Spanish sometimes. Even in New York City, I'm talking about some areas. Anyway, there is a much vaster vocabulary than most people use. Well, I was just seeing one email at work. One devotee was distributing books in a college in Santa Monica in California, and one professor was lamenting that students nowadays, they don't even have basic English skills. So the English language, like most other languages, except maybe some very, what we would call primitive languages, they're much faster than most people use. And there are many words which are used by more intellectual people, which, by knowing these words and using them, it is not just a question of showing off that I'm so intellectual, but every different word has its different nuances of meaning. Nuance, that's another word you want to look up. Subtle, different subtle flavors. There's a slight difference between words which are often considered synonyms. So some words, they explain concepts which are required when we are discussing intellectual topics. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, was very much on the intellectual plane. So there are certain terms which are very helpful, just like in Sanskrit also. There are so many philosophical terms which the lack of them in English means that we have to make them up. Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, before him, they They had to invent terms in English because there are no such terms. It's like the three modes of material nature. In Sanskrit, the words are there. It's known in philosophical circles. Triguna. We have the word transcendental, which is more precisely in Sanskrit. Triguna Atita. Beyond the three modes. So, yeah, these words are there in English, and even though English is a mlecha bhasha, mlecha refers to the original meaning of mlecha is one who cannot pronounce Sanskrit properly. And that's extended to those who don't know Sanskrit. And mlecha bhasha means people, a language spoken by people who don't know Sanskrit, which means even here we are in Karnataka, Canada, or the local language here is Tulu, which is a very nice language, I've heard it spoken. Very much based in Tulu and in Sanskrit. These are all considered mlecha bhasha, Prakrita. Prakrita means derived from Sanskrit, but on just people who don't have the brain or are not eligible to speak Sanskrit. So anyway, in English there are also so many words, and every language, the perfection of any language, it's not actually a matter of which language you speak, but what you speak, the subject of what you speak. One can speak total nonsense in Sanskrit. In fact, a lot of the Sanskrit literature is total nonsense. It's just, you know, love story kavyas, love stories, well, maybe based on Shastra themes also. Even Mahabharata, this Nala Damayanti, it's a love story. That's all. It's a whole long section of Mahabharata. There's nothing spiritual about it at all. So, it demonstrates feminine fidelity to the husband. So, you can talk nonsense in Sanskrit, or you can talk the highest transcendental philosophy in English. So, if those words are there, why not? Why should they only be used, these intellectual words, describing them, or used for the various lucubrations, you can look up that word, of deluded intellectuals? Why not use it for describing Krishna consciousness? These languages, they come, after all, the inspiration to speak comes from Krishna. The whole understanding of linguistics, how is it that a child learns to speak? It's almost like a mystic process that's analyzed in the modern science of linguistics, that if, alright, let's say some word, cow. Alright, I just said cow. And you all pictured in your mind a cow, right? You have a general idea of what a cow is. So there's this general gojati, or the category of cows. Now, how that sound becomes identified with that, with the concept of a cow. Not thinking of any specific cow, but cow-ness. This is all discussed in Indian philosophy, also Vedic philosophy. The general concept of cow-ness, which when I say the word cow, then you all understand what I mean. When I was walking down the road, I saw a cow. So in the mind, all these different terms, the meanings that they have, although it's a very simple sentence, but how they all fit together to make a general concept which is communicated from one person to another. It's actually a very mystic process. It's a very deep psychological process. So this is a gift from Krishna, speech, language. And that should be, why not use it in the service of Krishna? Why not? Why not? Let people, they can be educated also. Education means, throughout life we should go on becoming educated. We should learn. Go on learning throughout life. If we are to operate in the intellectual spheres, which a lot of our preaching is in that area, maybe too much, maybe we don't go to the villages enough. That's another whole discussion. But as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, and I quoted in Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, devotees, they should be, they're dealing with intelligent people, they should be ahead in intelligence. They should be ahead of the materialistic people. Why not? Why should devotees just be at some very bland, mediocre level? So, let there be good language. And actually, one reason which I didn't state in the book, I thought it prude not to, or prudent, not prudent to state in the book, not to state in the book that generally people think that devotees, and the mundane scholars think that devotees, and especially ISKCON devotees, that just a bunch of people jumping around and they don't have any real intellectual life. So let them see. You like to use big words? Well, you can also use them. It's not your monopoly. We're not overwhelmed by your fancy words. What are your future writing books? Writing projects, hundreds and thousands. We should inundate the world with Krishna conscious literature. Every day there are hundreds and thousands of books being written. We're just increasing the stock of Prajalpa in the world. There should be a whole new literature just to replace all this useless literature. My own personal projects, too many that I can produce in this life. So my future writing projects are to, the major one is to train some devotees to take up projects. There's so much work. Presently I'm re-editing some of my earlier books, and then there are several books which are on the anvil. The Vaishnava Etiquette, Culture and Behavior book, which I wrote a lot for many years ago. I've taken that up again. I put that off to finish the Bhaktisiddhanta book. Then a book about Lokik Nyaya, or commonly used examples, just like the frog in the well. It's not an example that Prabhupada made up, it's an ancient example from Mimamsa. There are so many like that. There are hundreds like that. So that's one of them. There are many other books which I've started and many which I'd like to do. Krishna willing, some more may come out in this lifetime. Balaram book. Family life in Krishna consciousness. Sannyas in Krishna consciousness. Commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc., etc., etc. A religious, philosophical, and cultural history of India. the real Shankaracharya understanding Lord Shiva, answering the atheists, how many? A message to the young women of India, sex and the Indian student, these are all different ideas. I won't finish them. Anything? Any question? No? All right. Yeah.
Are you reading the parampara?
Regarding the parampara, yeah, that's another book that should be done. So many books. Yeah, the Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. I have that. I plan that in 3 volumes. What is the mission of Srila Prabhupada? As Prabhupada said in one purport regarding the Yamadutas, said that a messenger of someone should understand their mission. The Yamadutas didn't understand what they were doing, actually. So that's it. So I plan that in 3 volumes. One, what is the mission? Number 2, how we are diverting from that mission. And number 3, various topics such as the relationship between ISKCON and Gauriamat and other groups, and the various accusations, the mistakes, of so-called mistakes of Srila Prabhupada, and how Prabhupada is the perfect representative of the parampara. So many things. There's so many books. Tracing the parampara jano bhalo mate, like the Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We should know what parampara is. So, showing how our parampara, there's the claims of the Babajis that they have the actual parampara, refuting that. There's books I'd like to write, but I don't know if I'll do it in this lifetime. What I'd really like to write for my own transit for spiritual upliftment and enjoyment is analyzing the transcendental ecstasy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as revealed in his writings. I doubt if I'll get to that. We have to. There's a lot of work to do in the basement. There's a lot of work to do in the Sika also, in the spire. But there's a lot of work on the basic level. So Prabhupada, he was concerned with establishing the Krishna consciousness on a solid basis, so maybe movements on a more solid basis go up to what people call higher topics. Although Bhagavad Gita is very high, isn't it? God in the street and talking about Bhagavad Gita, then it's way over their head, most people. They were talking about higher topics. What about Bhagavad Gita? It's high. Lokasya janato vidvans chakri sakata sankita. People don't know. So the acidic compassion and all of that. Okay. And that has to be there, otherwise intelligence is required to understand Shastra. Otherwise you get statements like ekam advitiyam in Shastra. And then in Mayavadis, if you take that literally, then there's only oneness. There you are, there you have 2 words right there, ekam advitiyam. So how is everything all one? So some intelligence is required also. There are hundreds of thousands of words used to describe how everything is one. But if everything is one, then what's the use of all those words? What's the meaning? All those words which they cite to say it's all one, but then why using so many words? If everything's near vishesh, then all the words they don't have any meaning. So some intelligence is required.
And there's someone who is initiated, like for example in Gaudiya Math, and he is inspired by the teaching of Srila Prabhupada and ISKCON.
Many of them read Prabhupada's books. The Bengali devotees in Gaudiya Math. I don't know, maybe all over the world they do too, because the books of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, they're too difficult to understand actually for most people. It's very difficult language. Prabhupada's books make it very easy. So those who are philosophically interested, it's not that they're all philosophically interested, many of them are not very philosophically interested. Many of them read Prabhupada's books. Mm-hmm. It's probably true all over the world too. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand the philosophy. Really some animal. Yeah, then
If they are really inspired by ISKCON preaching and their God initiation in Gaudiya Math, if they need to be reinitiated, or it's just possible to follow Shiksha?
Reinitiated? I wouldn't think so.
If there is the need of Diksha from the line from Srila Prabhupada, or they just need to follow Shiksha?
No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. Gaudiya Math Guru, some of them initiate devotees who initiate in ISKCON, but it doesn't work down the other way. ISKCON gurus don't initiate people who initiate in Gaudiya Math. Anyway, you know, you should be somewhat careful, because for uninitiated people to come close to the Gaudiya Math guru means they get initiated. Whether they know it or like it or whatever, they just by force they initiate them. Mm. By force or by trickery or whatever. It's not very ethical. So maybe they think they're doing some good to them. Well, it's not true in all cases, but in many cases. It's not. Or even if they're already initiated by ISKCON gurus, they initiate them again. As if to say the ISKCON gurus initiation is useless or something. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to arrange for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take sannyas again. That's not exactly the same. He thought Bharati was not a very good sampradaya. Bharati life. Mm-hmm. Remember that? You must have read that, right?
Yeah, but
it's a big book and you don't remember it all. He thought, well, Bharati, that's not a very good sampradaya, sannyas. He's had an arrangement to get initiated again. Gopinath Acharya, who's his brother-in-law, I understand the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, there are so many things you have to read again and again. You read again and again, and then so many. You'll find more and more there. Great treasures. That's the picture that they have. I did my Bhakti Shastri course. That's it.
So Bhagavad Gita finished.
Now I understand Bhagavad Gita. Kimanyai Shastra Vistarai, even if you study Bhagavad Gita only, Ekam Shastram Deviki Putra Gita. That's enough. There's so much. Kemanyai Shastra Vistarai, this means what is the need of studying in depth any other scripture? And then Ekam Shastram Deviki Putra Gita. You know this? From the Gita Maharaj. These are both lines from Gita Maharaj. Prabhupada translated this. Let there be one scripture for the world, Bhagavad Gita as it is. Eko Deva Deviki Putra Meva. Let there be one worship of God, Deviki Putra, Krishna. Then, Kamapya Kam Tasya Devasya Seva. Let there be one work, the service of that Supreme Lord. And what is the last line? Namani.
That's the last line, Arif.
Is it?
That's a nice one.
It's a Namani,
huh? Ego mantras, Tasya Namani.